All right. Welcome back, Thursday Warriors, to the probably most mediocre comic podcast in the planet, if not definitely in Pittsburgh. The Toddcast.
The Toddcast.
And you all love it. All of you do.
All the Rods love it.
Give me 1 second. I forgot to mute my screen as it airs. So like I was hearing myself in the background. It was very awkward. Anyway. So Tim and I are joined by Scott and James tonight of the Lost Gardens. We're going to get into that in a few minutes. While we let everybody roll into the chat, we're just going to remind everyone that of a couple events coming up. mostly it's two events in one. Actually I guess there's three. I'm going to be at the Thriftburg kind of like vintage swap thing at Construction Junction this Saturday from 10 to 4. So make sure you come out for that. And then the first Saturday of April is the Pittsburgh Mills anniversary sale. And it is also going to be our Jim Rugg signing for Hulk Grand Design Monster number 1. So if you need a copy, hit up the Mills. They got a bunch of extra ones. And Jim will be there from noon to 3. So
when is that?
Saturday the 2nd, I think.
Oh, okay.
Are you going to request off tomorrow? Is that?
No. I thought you said it was this Saturday. And I'm like, wait, we didn't get those books. And I was starting to panic a little bit.
The first Saturday of April. So.
Okay.
And then, you know, if you really want to plan ahead, we got Free Comic Book Day coming up a month after that. So, you know, all kinds of crap flying at you. It's going to be great. So, all right. So, how's it going, guys?
Pretty good.
Good, good. So,
it's going dandy so far.
Dandy. Excellent.
I noticed there's two people here without green on, but there's two with green on.
I know. And for shame, eh?
I will pinch both of you if I could. Digital pinch. I don't know.
Oh.
I was wearing green earlier, but then it got too warm in my house to keep the green hoodie on. So sorry.
I have no excuse.
I was like, what's yours, Scott?
I didn't even realize it was St. Patrick's Day till like 3 o'clock.
Oh man. Normally I wear my Dropkick Murphys like hockey jersey. Yeah, for like St. Patrick's Day 2011 or something. But I it was dirty. I couldn't wear it because it was dirty. So anyway. All right. So you guys put out your own book called The Lost Gardens. You can see the poster right behind Scott. And it's you guys were cool enough to send us a copy of the first 6 or 7 issues. I will say, without giving too much away, I love the art in this. I think the art was just super freaking awesome. Everything from like the earthy scenes to the tech scenes, it's all very, very well done. I like the coloring. I'll be honest, my only real like criticism of it was the first issue was like, what the fuck are we actually getting to? Like, it was so like so much. It was like reading an episode of Lost. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but you guys could talk about the book, pitch it. If there's a Kickstarter for another issue, cool. We can pull up the website, whatever you want.
All right. Well, I just want to start by saying a huge shout out to the creative team that work on this project, Deborah and Michael, who are the artist and colorist, and Robin, who is the letterer for the latter half of the more recent issues. And the stuff they do, it's amazing, right? Like, you know, I write the word, you know, like I make pretty with word, but they make pretty with everything else. And it's just so cool to
they
see.
Make it real.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I do have some pictures from issue one. So I'll just flip through these as you guys talk about the book.
Sure. And well, I suppose the start is, you know, the little synopsis, right? The setup to the whole thing. And it follows a story of the character named Sean Myers, who lives in this, you know, techno dystopian future where there's a corporation, as any good dystopia has, a corporation that runs this society called Etheon. And their core pitch is that they have, you know, augmented reality. They put contact lenses in everybody so that everybody sees what they want them to see. You know, technological enhancements. So it's a very cyborg type culture. And Sean finds himself in a spiraling, just his whole life crumbles around him. And all he wants is something real. And, well, let me tell you, he gets it. You know, he gets something real. And he ends up finding himself completely outside of his comfort zone because his implants begin to fail. And he begins to see the world for what it really is, a crumbling nightmare. And he will find himself outside of this closed-in city. And he will explore a whole world beyond those walls and having to survive in a world that, for the most part, wants him dead. And exploring new places, new worlds, new characters as Sean, well, as he says, he wants something real. And that's what he wants to, and he's going to get that.
Yeah. He's in quite the culture shock after he leaves Hub City.
Yeah. Definitely. Scott, is there anything you wanted to add?
No, I think I really enjoy what we're doing with it, and I like how we're taking the techno side of things, but we're adding supernatural elements into it as well with fear. I think that's a lot of fun. I enjoy it because yeah, it's like not only is he getting twisted up by the fact that everything, like, I mean, Buddy's wife's a robot and you didn't even realize it, right?
Yeah, so, like that, I was just gonna say, this is a great scene, like where he comes home from work and, like, you know, he's like, oh, I'm just gonna pour myself some wine, and then his contacts start going nuts and you're like, I was like, what the hell is going on here? When I first saw this, I was like, this is awkward, because I didn't know if it was like, I didn't know if it was like his contacts or if it was his skin, like her, like if it was like a skin,
yeah, like the thing, skin was falling like, off or
like
something,
like liquid skin, yeah, like yeah, like nano skin or something. I was like, what the hell?
I'm sure Sean was struggling with some of those things as well at the time. Yeah.
it's a very unsettling imagery to, you know, you he walks home, as you said, it appears to be this perfect little world. He lives in a nice little condo, he's in an apartment. Yeah, look at that. I mean, he's got a wonderful little house going, presumably his companion is there waiting for him, you know, like, oh, you know, how is work? And it turns out that none of it's real, and it's just it's right? It's a tough pill to swallow. Yeah.
But, I mean, like, look at this city, like the art in this, like that could have been full on out of like Blade Runner.
Yeah, right? I was like, getting a real Blade Runner feel out of that for sure.
Or the Colin Farrell Terminator, or I'm not sorry, Terminator, Total Recall.
Yeah,
like that kind of futuristic vibe, which I really, really dig. So
and
that Blade couch, Runner's man, that couch. I just want that couch.
Right? I need it.
and Blade Runner is most definitely a huge science fiction inspiration for me in terms of like, you know, you look at the greatest sci-fis of all time, and you, I don't know, for me, you have to have Blade Runner on that list. Yeah. You know, it's right. Set up what so many are built upon nowadays.
All right, so now I got to ask, is this a two-sided couch? Because, like, here we see it, and it's, like, up on the right, and then here we see it, and it's up on the left. So did she, like, walk around it, or was that just not caught in editing?
Yeah, it's definitely two-sided, yeah.
Oh, okay. The
future's here. Yeah. We live in a world where
it just morphs as people
well,
get
his
on
eyes
it.
Are tripping out, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's totally that. That's all.
John, so what good. He wanted to see, what was the couch on the left side. But what his implants were telling him was that it was on the right side.
Okay, connect with the story.
My bad. You missed all of it.
I also want to say, as a manager, this is both the dream and nightmare for employees. Panel right down here, to just have a table that your desk tells you when you're not productive. It's just like
when I'm at work and John comes.
It's true.
And then I'm like, oh God, I was doing this.
I was productive, I swear.
When I saw the scene with his wife, I got a real like, is it Ava from the 2049? You know, when you first see her with Ryan Gosling, and you're like, you're like, there's him and he's got his wife and he's little house. And then you realize she's not even real a little bit later. And it's like, whoa, that was just kind of crazy. But this is cool because in that sense, that was something he was used to, you know, that was just how life was. He knew she wasn't real. So the shock of this, of thinking that you have something real and then finding out that it's not. I think that's a really interesting a really interesting thing there. So,
and then it gets like super nuts in the second issue, because like the first issue ends with like him at this random, not supposed to be subway station, and he falls out into like the woods. Like, look at this cover art. Look how awesome that cover art is.
Yeah.
It was a fun cover.
Yeah. So I love that the kiosk is basically like a robot on wheels. It's basically Bender. Yeah, it just has kiosk written on him.
And issue two really dives into the because, you know, this series overall, it's a mix of sci-fi, fantastical, and supernatural elements. And in issue two, most certainly leans heavy into that supernatural and mystery element, because, you know, what's going on? And as a reader, you don't know what's going on, because you're just as confused as Sean Myers is, because here he is trying to do his own life, and now he's underground, falling through tunnels. There's dead cat dogs. There's giant monsters. Like, what's happening? Like
weird purple boxes with ropes underneath. I didn't realize this until I looked at it digitally, but holy God, are there a lot of words on this page?
There was a lot of dialogue in issue two. It was a very crammed issue. There was a lot to say. Yeah.
I felt that issue two started to flow better as a reader, only because like you guys put in that inner dialogue and it really helped push the story along the right way, I felt. I'm just going to go through all these issues you guys sent, so we can just kind of talk about it, and then we can talk about the book as we go. So this is like, let me share it. Sorry, it's been a long day. So this is
number three.
I look at this and like, so the new magic set just came out, Kamigawa Neon Dynasties. And all I thought was, wow, this is totally that cyberpunk forest.
I didn't know. I haven't seen that before, so that's I always find it funny when a lot of like those coincidences in life happen. Especially just as doing some writing, you know, you think of like different plot threads, and sometimes plot threads end up, you know, you watch a TV show and it's like, oh shoot, they already did it first, like, you know, like, darn, okay. Back to the drawing board. In issue three, we're introduced to a lot of new characters, and these characters especially will be huge players in the series overall, as we're introduced to new community, the outside world. And in fact, issue three barely even focuses on Sean. He's literally just a passenger. He's baggage, you know, at an airport.
Check your luggage, sir. I think it's cool, like, the way that this was drawn, because, like, when you finally see him with the shirt open, it's, like, you basically see, like, ribs, like, fully ribs, And I'm just like, what did they do to like just pull the skin real tight and try to staple it shut? Like what do they use? It's
unsettling.
Weird. Yeah. It's very weird.
The world they live in, everything's just, it's just slapped over, right? Like a thin, cheap film.
Yeah.
And so let's say they must have, you know, they go through cleaning protocols and stuff, like they're showering, but really they're just cleaning the suit, right? That they're living in 24/7.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I never even thought of that one.
Yeah.
It must get pretty rank.
Oh, I can only imagine the smell, and especially, you know, living in the boglands. Yeah. Maybe it blends.
Yeah. I did think it was cool that they were like, don't get him in the water, he's going to get infected.
Yeah.
Like, you know, actually thinking about that kind of stuff instead of just like trudging along and not paying attention.
So. Yeah. And like, there's something that, you know, happens in a later issue where they're forced to enter swampy water with some wounds. So maybe there could be consequences of those actions as well. And that's something I wanted to implement is, you know, the characters are thinking about the world that they live in, and they're being strategic, especially in a very wild landscape, as we saw in issue 3, you know, the grogs, those giant hulking, you know, creatures, and
the mermen.
Yeah.
Merman.
Mermaid man.
Oh man,
John, let's go. Can you go back to the cover for a second?
Yeah,
I have a question. So, when you guys are working on this, do you have ideas for, you know, what you want to be on the cover, or is this something that you leave up to the artist? How do you come up with, I guess, that part of it? Who's going to decide what's going to go on the cover?
So, I guess that's more to my department, eh, James?
Oh yes.
After we don't really talk cover until after the first illustrations are done, and then I'll go through it and I'll try to pick out a theme of the issue. So this particular cover here was Sean has he trips out in the issue. He thinks about getting murdered with an axe. So I thought a cover that like this would kind of leaves the reader thinking like what's going to happen, right? Like it still ties into the issue, but I want it to this one particular, I wanted it to be like a, oh no, is shit gonna, like what the hell's gonna happen in
suspenseful
this issue, right? Yeah,
well that was, and that was why I asked too, because looking at the first three issues in the covers, there's like a level of dynamic to them, but then when you see this one, it's kind of simple. You have this banner, and then you have this blood splatter with the silhouette of this axe. And, you know, I was trying to see like what the thought process is. How is it a lot more challenging to go with something simple as opposed to, you know, say like that second issue where he's falling through that like goo in the mouth? Or is it, is the book really like, as you're getting into it, does it just like flow and come out like really easy for you?
Issue 4's cover was the trickiest. Of them all, like issue one, it's like, okay, well, we're in this new techno city, so let's do some techno city type cover with Sean freaking out. In issue 2, that's when he's encountering Fear for the first time. Fear's taking advantage of the fact that Sean already is confused. So it's like he's falling, the mouth is Fear behind him, and then on the back cover, it's like a bunch of Sean's memories. Because that's what Fear is using against him. Issue 3, he's in the swamp. I wanted that tree there specifically, and the team with the grog watching over them. And then in this issue, Sean's meeting the town, right? And we already did a cover that's like, I guess, what would be the word, like a cityscape. So I didn't really want to do a cityscape. I wanted to do something a little bit more leaving the reader up to like, what is this? Like,
yeah, it's a lot more thought provoking. I don't know. This one, just out of looking at them, just kind of made the other ones, you know, you're kind of getting a sense of the story, like you were saying, looking at them, the city, stuff like that. But this one, I like, before I even turn to the first page, already in my, I have like a million different things that I'm thinking about just looking at this image. So I thought it was really cool cover.
But you got to remember that the actual cover is only half it's that,
wraparound.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wraparound. So you don't really know what the shadow is until you flip it or...
I like doing the wraparounds. About
that blood, that blood splatter, too, because it's like you're getting a little taste of it. So where the hell is this coming from? You flip it over, and it's like a reveal, you know?
I appreciate that, behind Tim.
Yeah.
I think it's like probably my least favorite cover of them all. So,
oh really?
Yeah, I think it's the one I did the worst job on because, like, I'll do up sketches and I'll work back and forth with Deborah with what we want to do, and that's what we came up with. And when it was finished, it's like, okay, that's cool. But then I'm looking at the other covers. I'm like, I like this one better. I like that one better. I'm like, oh, four. I feel like I dropped the ball.
No, I really like that one. I like it a lot.
I thought it was good too. I really like specifically like the Celtic looking symbol you went with. Like that's
An old symbol. We can get to that. Origins of all of this, but yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, here's some more pics from this. So here's where you actually find out it's the contact / robo eye, whatever you want to call it.
And
like I said, I love the art. The coloring in this is so vibrant. I love it.
Yeah,
Michael kind of gives me like a life. Jen Bartel feel.
Yeah, that's like what I was. How thinking.
Vibrant the colors are. Yeah.
Fun fact on Sean: Deborah's been gradually making his beard longer each issue.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Oh, that's
like,
cool.
Like the little attention, the little things, right? That connect.
Yeah,
right.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
It's cool. All right. Do we need to go through more? Or are we good?
Oh, that's up to you. I mean, we could maybe spoil some more as we go, but
I mean, I can let me at least show off the rest of the covers so you can see the covers. So,
and I wanted to make a challenge for Sean in issue 3. That's when his eye is irrevocably damaged. He's blind in one eye now forever.
Okay,
and we're 3 issues into a series, and it's something that I don't see often, where a main character gets essentially maimed in such a colossal way so early in a series, and this will have a profound effect on him, because now not only is his technological implants completely removed from his body, but he's completely severed now from his old world, and now he's stuck in this new one with, like, in theory, no hopes of return.
This cover like makes me think someone just started a game of Skyrim and like he's getting arrows shot at him. He doesn't have any weapons. He's screwed.
Yeah,
you know, that's how I feel on that one.
He's the level 2 alliance figure going into level 70 horde territory, right?
right. All right. Let's see here. 2 more. Oh, this one's kind of cool too.
Yeah, 6 is my favorite. I like 6.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I'm like, as I'm looking at these, I'm, you know, covering up the left hand side just so I can kind of envision, you know, what the right side, and then revealing it to myself. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yep. And the slughorn is, that's the name of the creature in the background there. It's a very unsettling design I went with. You know, the bulbous eyes, you know, it's living in the shadows of the night. It's
cool. It can essentially you know you maybe think it's like a firefly, you know, mixed in with these other ones.
Yeah
that's good. Pretty much what happens to Sean.
Yeah it's like almost like an anglerfish, you know how like it dangles the little like, hey, look at this little light, and then, you know, teeth. Just like what was that? Oh, that was a scene from Nemo back in the day there. Yeah
Did you name it Slughorn because of Willy Wonka?
No, actually, I guess I'll reveal the inspiration of Slughorn. I try to brainstorm like little titles. And at the time, I was in a little Harry Potter phase, and I was like, Slughorn, Professor Slughorn. What a great name for such an awful creature. And so that is the inspiration behind the Slughorn. Yeah.
because I think his name was Slughorn in Willy Wonka also, right? The guy that was like trying to trick everybody into giving secrets. That or was it Slugworth? I can't remember.
Hold on, I'll look it up here.
Yeah, I'm on that too. I'm like, what is the guy's name?
You're talking like original Willy Wonka?
Or Johnny
Depp? the original movie. Mm.
Let's see.
There's that guy that was going around. That's why all the other kids wanted all the stuff, because they were going to take it back to him. And whoever didn't was the one that
got Slugworth. The chocolate
factory. Slugworth?
Arthur Slugworth.
Wow. Yep. Slugworth.
What a name. What a guy.
But then he ended up like working for Willy.
Yeah, he worked for him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy.
Sorry, a little off track there.
It's okay.
Oh, no worries. I'm all about the tangent. Track. yeah. Life is just one big tangent.
Yep.
It's pretty much how I roll too. So. Yep. All right. Last one. This one's pretty sweet too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So we got a new character being teased on the cover there, and the return of the Grogs. Yes. Our also favorite giant scary monsters in the woods, or in the swampland, I should say.
I love the detail on like just like the tattoo on his chest, and everything's really cool.
Yeah, Deborah went all out for the character's name is Uriel, Deborah went all out for Uriel, and it was very cool to see. I had an idea in my head of, oh, okay, let's see, let's create a little description, but Deborah just always goes like to the moon and back with all these character descriptions. It's nice. Amazing.
That's awesome. All right. Cool. That way we don't give too much away and we get people to come and buy your book. All right. So where can people go to?
Where can we buy it?
Buy the book.
Yeah.
Well, it's available in I think little over 40 stores now.
Okay.
People, if they want, they can buy it direct from us. But I always encourage going to your friendly local comic book store, because if you're going to order from me, and it's going to be you're spending like $5 on a comic and then $12 on shipping, right? It's like that's a bit steep. So it is doable, and it's on Kindle as well.
And you know, after the show, we'll talk about how we can make that possibly happen in our store too. Hmm. So
that would be awesome.
Yeah. So I mean, you're already ahead of the game by having barcodes on these bitches. So, let me just tell you how many times I've had to deal with creators that don't know that that's a thing, and then we're like, well, no one's going to be able to flip through your book because I'm going to put it in a bag with a barcode on it. And they're just like, shit. And I'm like, yep, lesson learned.
Yeah.
So how many books are out right now? How many issues?
Seven. Yeah.
Seven. What's the plan for it as far as long-term? Is this, you know, like a 12 issue, or is this like, you know, you have plans and like maybe milestones where you want to get to, and we're just going to see, we're going to go as long as we can with it until someone says enough.
Stop.
I have, in terms of story, I have an overall idea of where it's going to go. So if we can, I mean, that'd be amazing if it can go longer than 12, you know, stuff like that. So in theory, you know, it's the world of comics, right? It's the world of business. But if we can, I mean, we got lots of story to tell. Awesome. And then,
I see it as an ongoing series with we have a predetermined conclusion. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, awesome. I'd like to see it go for a while. Like James says, there's a lot of story that we got for it. So.
I don't know. I look at it. I like it. I like the idea. And it, you know, it kind of bumps me out when I think of things like, you know, Walking Dead. And he's like, you know, I don't have a plan to end it, you know, and then it ended. And it's like, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's kind of like fell flat. Oh, no. Like maybe if you would have planned an end, even if you would have never got there, just to have that plan. So
And like from a story perspective, I do have, and we have a start, and we do have an end point, so we know, how it's going to end. It's not. It's just the question of how do we tell that journey getting there, and that's what we're, you know, we have a plan, but you know, the way that. It's natural to, you know, for stories to alter and change over time. And I think it's always interesting, especially in looking at hindsight too, when you read other creators' stories, they say, well, I mean, this is our story, but you know, back in the day we had ideas to go this way and it could have went a completely different route.
I'm a big believer in stories need to have an ending. Like when things start to get dragged on, I think the story and I guess I don't want to say product, but the piece of art or whatever it is that you're creating starts to suffer from that, I feel. So I think it's really important that there is a conclusion in whatever story. However much adventure is between the point A to point C is dynamic, right? But you do need to get to that Z. Like it has, I feel that's just my belief, but you know.
No, I kind of agree with you because there's a lot of things, especially in like nerd culture, you know, TV and comics and things like that, where they don't get to end on their terms and it kind of just bums you out. John mentioned Lost earlier.
Oh, I was going to say, J.J. Abrams is the absolute worst finale writer ever. Ever.
I think that's a really good example, you know, so when you have something that has, you know, a defined end and you can go out on your own terms, you know, I think that makes it, it makes it better. And it makes the whole thing a lot better too, you know, so.
Yeah. One of the, you reminded me of one of the just, one of the worst stings in my comic reading life was the Afterlife with Archie series.
I love that book.
It was so good. It was, you know, you took the goofy world of Archie ended. And you just turned it on to the zombie apocalypse and it never ended. And that's now from behind the scenes. I mean, the person who wrote that series went on to create Riverdale. Yeah. And so, you know, they you know, I guess they went off to greener pastures, but you know, for the fans of the series, they were like, oh, left hanging for years.
Well, so in that specific one, the weird part is he was writing that book while he was writing Glee, but then when he was like, oh, I'm gonna do this awesome Sabrina book too, and then it was Riverdale and Sabrina, that's when he didn't have time.
Oh yeah.
We're friends with Robert Hack because he lives in Pittsburgh, and we're always like, when's the next Sabrina issue coming out, buddy? When's the next Sabrina issue? I need some more of that Sabrina, buddy. So, So, you know, he's always like, Roberto's really busy. So I get like, you know, that could be a thing, but like, you know, then you get Abrams who just like goes, all right, we're just going to take all the fan theories about the show and that's our ending. And dude, he did it on fucking Felicity when he did Felicity and then he did it on Alias and then Lost and then what was the next one he did? Well, he did it with Star Wars. Like, you know, like he's just, it's like, dude, come on,
please,
you're better than this, you're better than this. At least he didn't screw up his Star Trek movies too bad.
Star Trek was good.
I enjoyed them.
Yeah,
it's probably because there's not really an ending for them. Like he's not like finishing off a trilogy. He's just doing solo movies.
Yeah, it just is.
Yeah. Right. Although he totally screwed up Khan. Anyway. All right, cool. So if they buy the book online, it's what, $5 plus shipping, right? In the US?
Yeah. Yep. Well, cool. $4.99, right? And all that jazz. But...
Right. Awesome. Yeah. So are you guys also the actual publisher? Like
that we are.
Cool. Do you have any other projects on the publishing label that you want to talk about at all?
Well, I mean, I've been talking to Deborah about another comic type project that I want to get started. That might not happen till next month, but it's more of a it's detached from the Lost Gardens. It's more of like a Foxtrot type style, like an actual comic, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's kind of in the works. I got an idea about what I want to do. That there's nothing made for it yet or anything like that, but this comic series, and our roots are in game development, so that's always a thing that's going on.
That's awesome. It's awesome. I also have to say, I fucking love this logo, like this Lost Gardens logo. It is really, really good.
Thanks.
So it's got that vibe where it almost makes all of your covers look like a band's poster for a tour or like a movie poster. So it works. It worked. Yeah. So whoever did that nailed it.
So. Yeah, they did a good job. Yeah.
What's the name of the publishing company?
Rabbit Hole Studios.
Rabbit Hole Studios.
Yeah, like Alice goes down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And finds all sort of amazing content here at Rabbit Hole.
Yeah.
It's a bad mirror. It's a bad mirror. Don't touch the mirror. So,
reach out to Perry Crow, our buddy Perry Crow, who did Stud and the Blood Blade, which is fantastic. He's a lot of really cool ideas. So, he's a great guy.
Yep. All right. So now we're gonna go and do our secret origin segment.
Origin.
So each of you get to tell us like where you grew up, how you ended up in the, and like basically from like where you grew up to how you got into like making this book, like, and anywhere in between that you want to go. We still got 20 minutes to kill on the show, so don't forget to leave some room for Batman so that Tim can say words that he will never say again. Probably it'll be hilarious. So who wants to go first?
All right, Scott, you want to tell your life story or do you want me to tell mine?
Oh, you can hit us off there, dude.
Okay. Well, it was a warm summer's evening, and the time was not. I was born in Prince Edward Island, Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, Canada, and itty bitty little island in the great big country there. So many people don't even know it exists, you know, and. Yeah. But I grew up. I mean, I was from a young age. My parents were. My dad is a huge Star Wars fan. He's a big comic guy, and so I grew up with that. And so I grew up with this stuff around, and so I fell in love with it too. And you love the superhero movies and all the the toys and all that. And when it comes to comics. My first real exposure was actually The Walking Dead. That was the first comic series I ever actually read. Because I was like, whoa, this zombie stuff is pretty neat. Okay, now mind you, this is like grade 7 or 8, James here. So I'm like, oh, okay, this zombie stuff is pretty cool, man. So I started reading The Walking Dead, and as you go to the comic store, you eventually get sucked into everything else, right? You see the stuff on the shelves and like, oh, well, I like Batman. And at the time it was Death of the Family with Scott Snyder, his run there. And that's what got me sucked into that. And here we are years later, I'm going every week, buying all the books, I shop weekly and I keep myself refreshed in everything that's going on in the comic world. And years go by, and that leads to a Facebook message from a buddy of mine who works for Scott there. And he's like, hey, yeah, you want to write something for us? And well, here we are on the podcast. And so that's the natural progression of things. I wrote an issue for them, and we had a lot of brainstorming sessions and going through the creative process, and here we are, but I think we're going on, is it 2 years now? Or is it just?
I think over? So, because I think we put out issue one right when COVID hit.
Yeah,
I remember that was sucked.
What a wonderful time for the comic industry, right? COVID when it first started. It was not.
No one wanted to talk to me, man. I tell you that.
And so if you want more detail, I could probably fill in a couple spaces there, but that's the natural train of everything that happened, you know, going to movies, watching Avengers for the first time. I mean, right now, outside of comic writing, I'm a teacher. And so it's so funny and hilarious to hear, you know, when I'm in the class teaching, the students who are there are only born when I was seeing Iron Man in junior high. Like, it's just like, oh, you know, you start to feel it a little bit, you know, like you weren't even born and I was watching Iron Man in junior high. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's
you're wild. As old as Iron Man.
Ouch. And it's just, it's an interesting, you start to feel it after a while, and I'm sure we're all gonna feel that, as you know, as the, like, 40 years from now when they reboot Star Wars The New Hope, you know, like it's gonna happen at some point in 40 years, you know. It's gonna be a tragic time too, I bet.
I couldn't even tell you were Canadian, and then you said process, and I was like, oh, there it is, he said process. And I was like, because like I couldn't tell the whole way, and then you said creative process, and I was like, oh,
process,
there it is.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So
and then I see Andrew McLaren down here in the chat. I'm guessing is a buddy of yours.
Oh, Andrew McLaren. Yeah, well, that's him. Yeah. That's the fella. Shout with out this, to Andrew. Howdy.
Andrew with his
good old Drew.
Maple Leafs logo on his
thing. Oh yeah. Yeah. We're big Leaf fans.
Speak for yourselves.
And you said Pittsburgh, right?
Yep.
So I'm guessing big Penguins fans.
Oh, you know it. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
I was actually born on Mario the Mew's 16th birthday.
So. Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yep. So he's 56 and I'm 40. No. Bummer.
I'm an Austin Matthews fan, so it's okay. I always like guys like Matt Sundin, so you have some good players in your
classic.
History of your,
or Dougie. Team,
so.
Dougie. Yeah. Earl Balfour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Balfour. Yeah, we used to have a buddy who used to call him Balfour. He just could not. There's two players. There was Balfour, he could not pronounce, and Vincent Damfus, who played for the Canadians, and he used to call him Dampenhaus.
Dampenhaus.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's called Dampenhaus. Don't, you know.
So. Yeah. Sure. Roll with it.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. I picked up on a little bit of it because I was talking to somebody the other day. I was talking to the guys who do Good Boy, because they were at the store the other day on a tour, and we were talking about how, like, Canadian is the polite Pittsburghese, and Boston is the dirtier Pittsburghese. So, because I, like, just because of the certain enunciations of certain vowels, like, you know, obviously, like, the sorry versus sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have like downtown versus downtown. So it's, you know, we're just joking that it was all connected, and we all sound like idiots. So it's okay. At least we don't say worder. That's my thing that I hate the most. Oh. And warsh. I'm like, warsh. There's no R in there, dude. Oh my God.
like when you go out to the sticks, that's when you start to get like, oh yes, we're going out to the Warsh by, like, you know. Like, that's where you start getting that. Yeah. Right. Even I go like, whew.
Right. Well, you almost like went full on Letterkenny there. That was that was pretty good.
Yeah.
So All right, cool. So Scott, it's your turn for your secret origin, man.
Your turn.
Super secret.
So secret.
It's all secret.
It's a secret.
I was born and raised in Brampton, Ontario. Cool. I wasn't exactly a good high school student or anything like that. I was into art when I was younger. I used to draw comics. I used to read comics here and there. I wasn't like a serial comic consumer, but I was into them as like a artistic medium more than anything. Like I like to draw them and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. After high school, I was a welder fitter for about 8 years. And
See that coming.
No one ever does.
It's all good.
Andrew's heard it 100,000 times, so, but I did that for a good part of my career, and then I had an opportunity to switch careers, and that's how I got into game development, because I thought that would be a pretty awesome job making video games. So I did that for a while. I still do that. That's still a big part of what I do. And we were doing our own independent video game development, and we started working on a game called The Lost Gardens, which is where this comic series comes from. So we were working on that. We took it down to Atlantic City. We picked up an indie award for it. And because of our work on that series, we got some contract work for the studio. And that was a bit of a bittersweet thing, because I mean, contract work is awesome. It's good money, right? But it also meant that I couldn't work on my independent game stuff, because it's a bit of a conflict of interest. It's like, we got a bug in the game, Scott. It's like, okay, well, right now I'm working on The Lost Garden, so it's going to have to wait. Like, that's not going to fly, right? So I had to put a pause on that, and I didn't want to give up on like our own stuff. So that's how the comic series came about, because the game takes place very much post-apocalyptic. It's after the events of the comic series, basically. So I thought it would be a lot of fun to do a prequel series on how the end of the world actually happens. And a big inspiration on that was, what was the name of the movie now? World War Z with good old Brad Pitt. There's a scene in that movie that I don't know, like the movie on a whole is okay, but there's a specific scene I really liked where they're driving in the city, and when they're driving in the city, it's right when the zombie apocalypse starts in that movie, and they're like sitting in a car and people are freaking out and they're like, well, what's going on, right? I really like that scene because I feel like a lot of post-apocalyptic stuff is either after shit hits the fan and you don't really get to experience the panic and like the loss of the actual event. So I thought it'd be cool to explore like how can we explore that kind of thing. So that's why we went into to do the series, and that's how the comic series came to be. And it seems to be working, because we're 7 issues in now. I read the script for issue 8 on Monday. I got it last week, but I mean, I was dragging my heels a bit. I've been busy. So, I ended up moving out here to PEI, where James is from, because my wife, she loves PEI. So I was like, all right. So we moved out here, and it's been a really good place for this kind of work, actually. Like a lot of guys are trying to, like, you think that you need to be like, PEI is like a real small place. Like Charlotte, the population of the province is like, 137,000 people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the entire province. So like people think you got to be in Toronto or New York or Silicon Valley to do this kind of work. But I don't think so. Like it's small. So like your overhead is way lower. Right, like you don't have to pay exorbitant amounts of things for office space or even living conditions, and then it's a digital business essentially, right? Like even like we shipped comics out to California, and it's like it's no problem, you know. I don't have to be in big places to do this kind of work. So
at least you're on the side of Canada that the publishing printers still have paper. So
is that a problem?
Yeah, like actually, yeah. Like DC even said like we may not have, like we may have to push stuff back because there's a paper shortage.
Well, I got it. Yeah. I put a print order in on Monday and it's ready. I got to pick it up tomorrow morning. Yeah,
right.
We're hiding all the trees over here.
Right. You guys don't have as many wildfires as we do, so you're good.
Oh, like Western Canada in the summer.
Yeah,
it's atrocious too. Yeah like okay. Actually, I think last summer, I think in Canada was the worst.
Yeah, we had the same season, in like from California all the way up through Washington was bad.
Yeah, and then that just continued up into Northern Canada into Western Canada. Yeah, because I think a whole town got razed in like a couple hours.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it was pretty scary. Yeah,
but no, you chose the cold side because you guys are like above Nova Scotia, right? Like like literally like the top, the most northeast in Canada you can get, pretty much, right? Yeah,
or well, PEI borders, and I'm in Newfoundland, which is the northeastern tip of North America. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
And, take me there. Take me there now.
It's very windy. Very windy all the time. Yeah.
All the time.
I just want a little pond out back to skate on.
Oh yeah. I mean, mind you, the winter here has been very mild in my part of the province. But if you go to the other side of the island, it takes about 8 hours to drive to the other side of the island.
Yeah,
and that's where all the snow is. Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, oh yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Jeez. All right. Well, I guess we're gonna go on to talk about some other non-Lost Garden stuff. But if you guys want to pitch the website one more time, and then like we said, like you know, we'll talk to you guys about carrying the book in the store.
I'll put the link for the website in the chat below.
Oh yeah, here I can grab that. Yeah, rabbitholestudios.ca.
Cool.
And I think if you Google the Lost Gardens, that also pops up too, doesn't it, Scott?
Or our main competition is a garden in the United Kingdom.
Ooh.
So the whole name of this series, like I said, I was working on it as a game, right?
Yeah.
So we work with a music composer, and his name's Charlie Armour, and he's in the UK. And when we were first starting on the project, I'm terrible at naming shit. Like, I'm awful. I don't know. What are we going to call this game? And he pitched the idea of the Lost Gardens. I was like, hey, I like the sound of that. That works. Let's run with it. Years later, I find out that I think he ripped it off of some garden in the UK. So if you Google the Lost Gardens, you might find us, but you might also find, it's a weird garden. They got like these massive heads that are like half in the ground covered in moss.
Oh, wow. That sounds more like an Easter Island type thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. So, all right. All right, cool. So chat there. Awesome. We will make sure people get that. You guys are more than welcome to stick around for a few more minutes while we talk about this awesomely random stuff. Oh. So, yeah. First thing we're going to talk about is the boys' diabolical animated cartoon started. I've only watched one episode, and it was brilliant. Like, it was like Animaniacs for adults. Like, really, like Animaniacs was kind of for adults. This is like legitimately let your kids watch this cartoon. Like, no, there was no actual voice acting. It was just like outside of like some kind of thing. Okay.
Interesting.
Like, and it was laser eye baby's day out, right? So, like, I'm just gonna pitch you guys the first episode. It was so awesome. Scientist goes in to check on, like, he works at Vought. He goes into he works at the Vought adoption area. So he goes to check on the laser eye baby. Laser eye baby still can't hit the freaking target after 20 days. So he puts mist on his thing, takes it down to his boss. His boss is some crazy brain that can float. And he brings like all the giant muscle guys with guns to go try to kill this kid. And so he's like trying to rescue the kid and sneak the kid out. And like all kinds of shenanigans happen. The kids ends up in the park zoo. Like the truck with the muscle guys like slams into some dude and just splatters him everywhere. The laser eye baby cuts people's heads off. It's awesome. Like it keeps very much so the Boys idea, the Boys vibe, but really mixes it with like classic Warner Brothers cartoon. Cool. Like it's awesome. It
sounds really how long's the episode?
It was like 15 minutes.
Is it about like just a bunch of shorts or is it?
Well, I've only watched one episode, so I don't really know, but I think it's supposed to be like 15 minute animated shorts.
Yeah.
Very much so like old school Looney Tunes where it'd be like, you know, 2.5 hour segment or 3.5 hour segment. I think it's going to be like that. So.
And I've heard the, apparently one of those particular episodes, maybe towards the end or something, is directly canon to the TV show.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so, excited. And especially with the season 3 trailer that dropped the other day, which was, oh,
yeah. Hype. Oh, I know. Like, season 3 comes out the weekend of our convention, and I'm just like, no, I have to wait and watch it. So, either I'm just going to get zero sleep during the show and just watch that at night. So, who needs an after party? We're all just going to watch The Boys. It's fine.
There you go. Sounds great.
That's my backup plan for if the VIP party goes awry. So, but definitely check that out. It's on Amazon starting now. Season 3 comes out beginning of June. All right. Now we're going to talk about The Batman. So,
The Batman.
To preface, I got to talk about The Batman last week with our guest because Tim ended up not being able to make it. But Tim and I wanted to talk about it again so that he and I could talk about it. And he is going to have on record a sentence that he will never probably say again. So why don't you start out with that? And then
the sentence,
and then we will move on to the actual movie itself. Go for it.
The Batman is a great movie. I didn't think it was going to be. I did not think it was going to be. It was a really, really good movie. There were some elements that I didn't like, but overall, it was a really good movie. Is it Paul Dano who played the Riddler?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I don't care so much for the mask. I got how it pays off later in the movie. But that scene when you see him with his mask off, I think I told John this. If that guy was in my house in the dark and then in an alternate universe that I'm living in, the guy with the mask was in my house, I'd be more scared of the guy without the mask. He shouldn't have had it on the whole time. Just really creepy. Really good job. I don't know. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought the story was really good. I thought they did a great job with Batman. I thought it was an interesting take that you have Batman in the movie the whole time, pretty much. You know, it's called The Batman. What if we have Batman in it the whole movie? You know?
Right.
And I thought it was like, yeah, nobody's really done that. So I thought that was really cool. It helped ease my mind a little bit because I didn't think he looked like a Bruce Wayne. But they kind of explain that in the story anyways. You know, he didn't really care. Alfred tells him, he's like, you don't really care about your legacy and anything like that. And it's like almost like he's letting himself go. Yeah, I don't know if there's a specific part you want to talk about, John, but I really enjoyed it.
I just enjoyed it overall. I thought the updating the Riddler to be more realistic made him terrifying. Because up to this point, we didn't really have one that was terrifying at all. I just thought it was really well done. The only thing that, you know, a friend of mine and I were talking about the other night was like, it suffered from Lord of the Rings ending where it was like, oh, an ending and then another ending and then another ending.
Yeah.
So that could have been
probably about a half hour too long. I would say that's,
I don't even know half hour. I would say maybe 15 minutes. But I just really liked it. There were moments where I got like a cool Dexter vibe. But I also really just enjoyed the fact that it was Detective Batman, not just Batman and Friends.
Jim Gordon working together is like everything I've ever wanted in a Batman movie. And I'm not talking about just like Jim Gordon's already there and then Batman shows up. Like they're like, hey, I'll race you to the crime scene, you know, and then they get there together and they're not telling any of the other cops and they're just trying to figure it out themselves. It was like almost like a buddy cop thing with the two of them. Yeah, that's like, I mean, they're not wrong with this with this meme.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, this meme was probably the best thing that came out of this movie.
This is how dark this movie was. In the last half hour, the lady in front of me and one seat to the left decided, I don't have any clue what's going on in this movie, so I'm gonna pull out my phone and get on Facebook, but not in dark mode, and blam, just white light in my face. And just blinded me. That's how dark this movie is. Penguin was amazing. I didn't think I'd like him at all. I was like really hard on Colin Farrell when I saw that casting, and you know, I'm a big fan of Danny DeVito's Penguin. So I wasn't sure I was gonna like it. You know, he wasn't in it a lot. And I'm not necessarily sure like that they need to do a show. They're talking about doing a show all about the Penguin. I'm not sure. I think the thing that worries me about that is there's a certain tone to this movie. And, you know, when you look at Suicide Squad that James Gunn did, and then you look at Peacemaker, it translates so well because he did both of them. So if he's not going to do or be involved in this Penguin show, is it going to lose that feel? And not like kind of feel connected to the movie and to that universe. So that's my concern about them doing a Penguin TV show. But I mean, they got James Gunn to do it, so maybe they can get him to.
Didn't they already do a Penguin TV show? It's called Gotham.
Yeah, it was called Gotham.
I
liked that guy as
I did too
as Penguin.
He was pretty good.
He did a really good job.
I couldn't watch that show after season one because it kind of like veered off it was like, oh, we're going to do like basically Gotham Central. This is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. Season two. Nope.
Oh, yeah.
I made it up until the point with Jerome.
Yeah. It kind of went, it was a wacky show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when Jerome, you know, revealed that he had the Joker laugh, and the guy was, I forget the guy that's, he's in Breaking Bad, that rings the bell. He was in an episode of Gotham and he had slept with that Jerome guy's, you know, mother.
Yeah.
And they're in the cell and they're talking about it. And then he lets out that, Joker laugh and man, he was really good at that.
Yeah.
What's his last, something Monahan.
Cameron Monahan.
So. Yeah,
he was a highlight of the series.
Yeah,
he was really good, but that was probably about when I kind of fell off. I guess they did a Solomon Grundy take later in the series that came off really bad. Yeah.
Oh man, I still think the best Solomon Grundy we got was actually on Stargirl. So, which
I still haven't watched it.
He's a big giant mutant. He looks like Frankenstein. It's beautiful. Like
nice.
So all right.
Well, that's my official review of Batman. Go see it.
It's great.
Yes. It's what we've finally been waiting for. No mention of Superman, Aquaman, nothing. It's just Batman. It's a Batman story. Just that. Not worried about creating an other expanded universe. It's the Iron Man movie for DC. It's exactly what they need to get that started if it is going to go somewhere. So
right.
And I mean, crazy idea, but have a Batman movie where Batman drives the story. Whoa. I mean,
yeah,
wild, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. This is
even though lunch. There's like all those emotional things, it's always like, here's Bruce Wayne and he's going through things, so he's Batman because of it. You're getting to watch Batman be Batman and deal with all those Bruce Wayne things while he is Batman, and it was a really cool take on it. So
You know, yeah. I think this is why I like Batman Begins so much, because it is very much so like Bruce Wayne finding his mask, or taking off his mask of Bruce and becoming Batman. And I love it so much because it just builds that story and they wove it so well. And I think that's why that's still my favorite one. So,
yeah, that's a good one.
So cool. All right. Well, I don't see any questions in the chat. Your buddy Andrew not asking questions. So I
said flashbang.
More shame.
So, all right. Well, thanks again, guys, for coming on. It was
really
awesome.
It.
The book is great. I'm gonna let Tim borrow them here when I'm done rereading through them, because I read them when I first got them back end of last year, and then I was like, oh, I should probably reread them. So I reread the first half today and before this, so got a refresher. So it's very good. Everybody checking out Lost Gardens, Rabbit Hole Studios, right?
Studios.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Cool. And make sure you check that out. All right. We'll see everybody again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for being on,
guys.
Yeah.
We'll see everybody again next week. Thank you, Thursday Warriors. And that's about it. Have a great weekend and go buy some comics.
Peace.